Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. Well, today's episode is going to be about inclusiveness, and it came about because of just some things that we wanted to talk about in the introduction, and they kind of grew. And it turns out people like Marvel were adding to the conversation. So we decided to devote the whole episode to inclusiveness. So we're going to first bring up the news to get everybody up to speed, although I think most people will have heard of the news by the time this uploads. And then we'll talk about inclusiveness in gaming, not so much gaming in general, but gaming at your table.
I'm sure Marvel put out that news just so we would have something to talk about and expand our conversation because, you know, they're quite... No, consider it like that.
Yeah, how kind of
well timed. They must have known we postponed the recording day.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So, yeah, as Lyle said, unless you've been living under a rock, you have heard that Thor is now a woman and Captain America is now black.
Shock, gasp, oh my.
Yeah, which is funny because I just watched Thor Dark World over the weekend. And you know what? Thor being a woman might have made it better.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. The movie was pretty bad.
Exactly. So anything would have made it better.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, don't.
Well, that's a real conversation killer, Thor Dark World.
Apparently so.
Much like the first Thor.
So, yeah, so it was announced on The View, which is an ABC show.
Right.
So that's affiliated with Disney, who owns Marvel now.
Right. And the article I read said that Captain America being black was announced on the Colbert Show, or the Colbert Report.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So he has a Captain America shield on his wall.
Right.
So. And he's one of the people cited when they talk about, hey, famous people that play D&D, and it's like Colbert.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel.
Yeah, those people. Yeah. Tim Duncan from San Antonio Spurs.
Right. Will Wheaton. Big surprise there.
Yeah, right. It's some of them are like, what, Tim Duncan? And it's like, Will Wheaton. You're like, yeah.
Yeah. Yep, saw that guy.
Does he? So for the first one, Thor, it's, I guess Thor's not worthy of his hammer.
Right.
Look into that as much as you choose to.
Yeah. So a new person takes up the mantle and then becomes, and I think they were making the point, actually Thor and not Thorita or something else.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Not Lady Thor, which is apparently an existing comic book character.
And then they have some art, and she looks a lot like Valkyrie,
mm-hmm.
except has a helmet, and instead of a sword, has a hammer.
Yeah, right.
Mjolnir. Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird where it seemed like Thor was now a title, you know, rather than the name of a person. So... but it's a comic book. Things don't really have to make sense, and don't think about it too hard, or else you'll make yourself crazy.
Is that what they're going for, inclusiveness, or are they going for a marketing gimmick and a way to get people to talk about it?
Can it be both?
Is that what inclusiveness is, a marketing gimmick? Is that what it is to you?
Wow, just going diving right into it. Okay.
Sorry, yeah. Man, you opened that door.
All right. Well, and the other news, Wayne. You mentioned that Captain America will be black.
Right.
I believe it's going to be Sam Wilson, the Falcon, is going to take over.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And in the past, people have taken over for Captain America. The storyline I particularly liked is when he quit and became Nomad,
okay.
The man without a country, and John Walker took over, and then John Walker later became the U.S. agent.
Mm-hmm. So that, that one made, not that it made more or less sense, but that one was easier to kind of wrap my head around, where Captain America is kind of like Batman, where, you know, it's a person in a costume. And so it, again, I hate to say that it makes sense, but it's just easier to put on the costume and then adopt that persona.
Than Thor.
Well, yeah, than Thor, because, yeah. I mean...
Well, you know, that was my first reaction as well. Like, I don't mind that they're switching around the races, genders, whatever, of the characters. But Thor, you know, is based on a mythological figure, and it has kind of a real-world history to it, even though it wasn't real. But So it's kind of, that struck me as a little bit odd, but, you know, as Lyle pointed out as well, there's, you know, they completely played haphazardly with the mythology anyway, so it's not like the breaking with that is a big change to the comic books, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I went to watch the movie, you know, I kind of say, okay, right, this is Marvel Thor, not like Norse mythology Thor.
Exactly.
They're similar, but, you know, Marvel can do whatever they want with it, and so, yeah. I already have. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with Thor being a woman. Thor happens to be one of those characters where Marvel would like to always have a comic, like a monthly comic for.
Right.
But the character's popularity waxes and wanes.
Mm-hmm.
More so than maybe other characters, and of course a real comic book fan would know more than me. But more so than other characters, Thor is somebody who really depends on the writer.
Mm.
Where people, from my experience, tend to follow the writer's story arcs as opposed to, I need to always collect Thor. So he had a really good writer, a longtime writer. I think his name is Walt Simonson. And that's when I read Thor. And then when he left, I think Thor just pretty much died. And then he was resurrected later.
Right.
And you mean... Both. I think he died, too. And
I was
resurrected in the comics, but I'm actually talking about...
Literally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Didn't know if he meant literally or...
He died or disappeared. I can't really remember. Hmm. It was during the... It's when they were rebooting, like, the Avengers and everything. And then they brought Thor back, and everybody really liked that writer. Hmm. Unfortunately, I never picked up any of those issues. So, as far as the comic book for comic book fans, I think it's just really going to depend on what the story is.
Right, right.
And as far as people watching The View, hearing about Thor being a woman, I think maybe a lot of them will go, "Hey, that's great. That's great that it's a woman." Very few or none of them are going to go to the comic book store to pick up this comic. There's going to be a little bit of a spike, you know, like when. North Star gets HIV or Superman dies, people are going to buy that issue.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to continue on with Alpha Flight or the Superman comics. It's just a collector's issue.
Right.
Maybe.
Which isn't worth very much because so many people buy it.
Yeah. Well, I reckon that it might be worthwhile for them to do that. If you get a comic book fan, I mean, that's the person who will be buying probably an issue a month or so for the rest of their lives. So that's a pretty big investment, so... I reckon it's not a small thing that they got that kind of exposure on The View.
Yeah, but comic book fans don't go to The View to get their comic book information.
No, of course not. But
so a diehard comic book fan, the people that are going to get hooked, are you saying they're going to take somebody who watches The View, they're going to go to the comic book store, and then they're going to become a comic book fan because of some character who is the hunky one on The Avengers? They'd be like, Thor, isn't that really good-looking one on The Avengers? Like, why couldn't they make that guy with the bow and arrow? Why couldn't he become a woman? Yeah, so I could do that. Maybe, you know, how about Iron Woman? So, not Chris Hemsworth. He's so dreamy.
Well, you had a pretty good, maybe this is jumping ahead, but you had a pretty good point, Lyle, when you're like, are they going to recast Chris Hemsworth for the movies? Or is Thor going to change back to being a man before... The next Avengers movie comes out.
That's going to be so
definitely murky, before Avengers 2.
Okay, that's your prediction?
That would be my prediction. Here's an interesting theory. I don't know Chris Hemsworth's contract details, but he's probably signed up for 6 movies.
Okay.
3 Avengers, 3 Thors. I definitely know Chris Evans has signed up for 6 movies, 3 Captain Americas and 3 Avengers. They've already introduced Sam Wilson in Captain America 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see Anthony Mackie taking over for Captain America 4.
Do the movies follow the comic book lines that closely? I could see Thor branching off with the character as a woman, but I could see the movie line continuing on with the character as is.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's lots of changes. I mean, the Batman series, they do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They just put it into the director, and what are you going to do? You got to, here are the things that you can't change, but everything else is up to you.
Right.
They probably already mapped out what they're going to do for at least the 3 movies in each part of the series.
Yeah, with the amount of time that it takes to make movies, I would be very surprised if they hadn't already started production on all of them now, and to change the character like this.
I mean, but you buy the property, I guess, if they don't care about the comic book so much, or they think, well, let's see what the comic book does on its own, and it becomes female Thor becomes a real hit.
Oh yeah, then I'm sure they'll make movies about that too.
Right.
Yeah, sure. There's, and that's another good point. I mean, how many movies have a female lead?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no Wasp or Scarlet Witch. I mean, they don't even have their own comic book, right. But there's no She-Hulk movie.
Right. I know we're talking about Marvel, but, you know, there's a kind of a big stink made about why Wonder Woman doesn't have her own movie yet. Mm-hmm. You know, all she's going to do is appear in that Batman-Superman movie next summer.
Well, even the Wonder Woman comic book is, I mean, it goes through periods of popularity, but it's not a perennial seller like Batman.
Right.
They tried to make a Wonder Woman movie a few years ago.
Wasn't there like a fan-driven effort a little while back? I remember seeing a bunch of trailers online for and everybody being really excited about it, but I don't remember seeing anything coming of it.
Well, I think Adrian Palacki was going to be in a Wonder Woman movie, and they had pictures of her in the costume, and I think it got, like, people weren't happy with the way the costume looked, but for whatever reason, the movie died. I think female Thor is a gimmick. I mean, they certainly have strong enough female superheroes. I mean, they have Valkyrie in Marvel. She's pretty much female Thor already.
Right.
So why not just do more with her? Do more with She-Hulk. She's a great character.
That's kind of...
And I know, you can't just announce, oh, She-Hulk's still around.
Right, right.
And, like, they're not going to announce that on The View, and people are going to be like, whoa, She-Hulk, she's still around.
Right.
Great.
Like I said.
So you need something that's going to be, oh, what? We're turning Thor into... And it has to be somebody that's in the movies, because then people will know who you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, I get it, but it seems pretty transparent what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think agree. That's... Yeah, I think we're all on the same page here, and... That's why I said it's kind of both, because on the one hand, you can say, great, you know, yeah, we now have these iconic characters who are now not kind of the standard white guy, right? So you're being more diverse and making these really well-known characters, you know, a different ethnicity or a different gender, yeah, really... sends kind of like a big shockwave, you know, through popular culture. Not always, which is, not all of it is good. But at the same time, I agree with you, Lyle, where it does kind of feel like a marketing ploy or a gimmick to kind of shake things up and get people's attention. And I don't know, saying mixed feelings means I don't like it, but yeah, I don't know. Great that you're being more diverse. It's still... You're still a business, and you're still trying to make money off this.
And it's not like this is anything new either. We were talking over email today about it. I mean, there's Miss Marvel, a teenage Muslim girl.
Right.
The new Spider-Man is Hispanic. Some of the examples you gave, Lau, were going way back to the 70s and 80s as well. Was it the Constantine had boyfriends?
That was another one where I... Again, Wayne. Wayne's got his finger on the pulse of Twitter.
Only because you guys refuse to do anything with the social media.
And I do Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And people, I guess, were upset that Constantine wasn't going to be bisexual in the TV series.
Yeah, that's what it
seemed. And my response was, he's bisexual? Because I had read him... In the 90s or the early 90s, with a particular Garth Ennis, but the guy before him as well, I think his name is James Delano. And I didn't recall him ever being bisexual. And it turns out there's a reference in one issue that he had boyfriends, and I think in the 2000s this issue came out. So I didn't think that was terribly critical to the character, like. If they were like me, they could have written this Constantine series and somebody stood up in the press conference and said, and is this character bisexual? And they would like, no, he's heterosexual. I was like, why'd you change the character? And they'd be like, what? Did we change this character? Because, yeah. I mean, he's known for like destroying his relationships and womanizing, but I didn't know he was a manizing as well. But
humanizing.
Yeah,
humanizing.
Humanizing. That's what he does. Yeah. What's wrong with that?
I don't know. I mean, the only exposure I had to Constantine was the Keanu Reeves movie, which I know you didn't like, Lyle. Or maybe that's a strong word. But yeah, I kind of had the same reaction where, is Constantine bisexual? I don't know. If he is, then yeah, I can understand people being angry that he's being made heterosexual for the TV show. Because we've discussed before about how it's nice to see people you kind of identify as yourself reflected in media. But I don't know. I don't know if his sexuality was ever made a big deal in the comic book series. So
it doesn't seem like it was part of his story. It was just a very, very small part of his background.
And I guess he's on a list of the top 10 gay and bisexual comic book characters, but that's probably because it's a pretty short list anyway.
Right, when we were discussing that.
So there might be 11, and he cracked the top.
Right, right. When we were discussing that before, I'm like, to me, that says more about the small number of gay and bisexual characters rather than the fact
that 10. I actually didn't look at the list. I'm guessing Batwoman's on there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And North Star.
Right.
Who they gave HIV and then took it away. The comic writers giveth and the comic writers taketh away. And I guess he benefited from that. I think I actually read Alpha Flight, so I was collecting it anyway when he got HIV. But then I don't know what happened to it, but it turned out he's doesn't have it anymore.
But
he's openly gay, so which is fine. Yeah, so I in that case I think they might have said, well, we want to do something with a gay character. How about not have a gay character with HIV?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so
we have heavy stereotyping going on.
Good idea. Good
idea. When was that written, though? Like
the when he got HIV.
Yeah.
I think it was written in it was late 80s, early 90s.
So that was probably the comic book writers trying to be topical, but also having to wait until the topic was quote unquote safe to talk about. You know.
Yeah, and I don't think he ever had a boyfriend prior to that. Yes, heterosexuals can get HIV.
Right, because again, you know, showing him with a boyfriend would not have been probably not all that safe for the time, since we're kind of just now getting, homosexual kisses on TV.
But we actually disagreed about what they should do about Captain America being black, because you two were saying that they would like the comic book to do something, or the stories to do something about the fact that he was black. And I think they don't have to, because they've already established that Sam Wilson is the Falcon. He's been a longtime sidekick of Captain America. He's known as being like super bright. I think he's a scientist or something like that. So choosing him to be Captain America, he would be on the short list, regardless of his skin color.
Right.
And if they chose him to be Captain America and he's worked for the government for so long, it's like, who is going to react to that?
Right.
They would be like, oh, it's Captain America. And then most people would be like, well, we've got President Obama. I mean, why would we care that Captain America is now black?
Right.
They would know it's a different person, obviously.
So by setting up that analogy, what I'm now picturing is everybody clamoring to see Captain America's birth certificate. Right, when you make that change. So, no, and
people refusing to serve with them.
Exactly, exactly. And like I said earlier, it's not as if once Captain America becomes black, it's not as if everybody he fights against should be like a white supremacist or have a problem with his ethnicity. All I think to put words in Chris's mouth, because I think we agree, all we're saying is that if he's treated exactly the same, why change his ethnicity?
But maybe they didn't change his... Yes, I think there's a marketing element there where it's like, now we can say Captain America's black, gets on Colbert, people talk about it. But unlike female Thor, where it's like, whoa, that wasn't expected. This is a case where if Steve Rogers were to die or retire, you've got a very, very short list of people to replace him. Falcon happens to be one of them.
Right.
So it's not a huge leap to do that. It would be like when Rhodes replaced Tony Stark as Iron Man.
Right. So I wasn't thinking...
Now, he's Iron Man, so there was... people can't necessarily see that he's black.
Hmm. My whole point is, as I said, I think I said before in a previous cast, I don't think we as a society are at the point where everyone is colorblind. And so treating a black Captain America exactly the same as a white Captain America and kind of not doing anything with his ethnicity, I'm not going to say it would be a mistake, but it would kind of, I would kind of, and again, not that I'm going to read the comic book just because I'm not a comic book person, but I think it would be a wasted opportunity. Like, okay, you're going to make someone's ethnicity kind of matter, then explore what that is going to do to the story. It doesn't have to be the focal point of the story arc, but if these two characters are going to be indistinguishable, and I know they're different characters with, you know, different personalities and whatever, but if these two characters are going to be indistinguishable from each other, why do it?
Well, I mean, why do it? I mean, they've done it in the past where Captain America leaves and Steve Rogers died for a bit. And it's the same as, like, Batman. He dies, and before he comes back, somebody takes over and takes on the cowl. And in Captain America, they take the shield. And they're telling a different story. They're telling a story of somebody who has insecurities because they're not filling white Steve Rogers' shoes. They're filling Steve Rogers' shoes and the legend that he is.
Right.
And those are the stories that they tend to tell. John Walker was a bit unhinged. So they would kind of tell that story. I think I understand what you're saying, and we always talk about this, you know, in games. When if you're going to do it, make it matter. Right. So I definitely understand that approach. It's just Marvel's also in a situation is like, how much should we make this matter? Because should it matter that Captain America's black? And it's not as if it's not. Yeah, society is not entirely colorblind, but sometimes comics are like, well, do we want to, what kind of story do we want to tell? Do we want to tell the way people should react to him and the way we presented him as just another really capable super guy who would be the logical choice to take over? So most people aren't going to make a big deal. Yeah, sure, they might have some white supremacists, and yeah, they could do parallels to the birth certificate, even though I think Sam Wilson's parents are from the States. Yeah, so do you understand what I'm saying?
I know, like, what you're saying, yeah.
If they make too big a deal of it, you're like, okay, so 2014, it's a big deal that Captain America's black? What? Like, why is it a big deal? Or how big, what should they do? Are they going to have Congress people being opposed to it? Are they going to have people protesting outside the White House? And they say, is this really what would happen if Captain America was black? Are they going to have Red Skull say something racist,
which is great because he's red.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't think they can make too big a deal of it. But I actually said, remember, I don't know if you remember, I don't know if I ever mentioned in the podcast, but when they were looking for, they hadn't cast Chris Evans yet for Captain America, right. And I said, you know what they should do? They should cast Will Smith.
No, I remember you saying this.
Or somebody like that, and then, because that would have been in the 40s, and then that's a story, and my idea was he would have a full mask, so no one actually knew what his skin color was.
Right.
And then he gets thawed, and everybody's like, oh, you're black. Oh, hey, we're totally cool with that. But then that would have been an interesting story to tell, an African-American from the 40s waking up in the 2000s and seeing how society is then.
Right.
And then, you know, if the story with the first part of the movie set in the 40s, dealing with the racism and the segregation that's going on in America. And he is very patriotic, but also has to deal with the fact that the country is very flawed in the fact.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that is essentially what I'm saying. Like, the part about the fact that he is black matters, right? Once he's thought out, to use your example, Lyle, everyone is kind of initially surprised, but then it matters much, much less than it did back in the 40s. But they still, it's still acknowledged. Maybe that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for some kind of, I would be disappointed if Captain America's ethnicity is not acknowledged in the series after he changes his character.
And I think it's going to be in a positive way, where you'll have like a little,
whoa.
You'll have like some guy on the street, a teenage boy or teenage girl who's, and I don't mean from the streets. I mean on the street.
All right. So being on the street, so they're homeless, which means they're automatically a minority.
Okay. Jeez, no,
he goes into their home.
Because he's breaking and entering because he's African-American now.
So you're going to have an African-American kid or teenager, and they'll say something like, oh, that's great. And he'll think, yeah, that's why I do it. Or something like that. It'll be a little bit cheesy, but they're not going to spend a lot on it. I mean, they're not going to have what would be actually be a very, very realistic way to do it is people pretending like it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And then there's thought bubbles like, oh, you know, it's kind of odd to see a black Captain America. But see, like, what does that say about me?
Even that is acknowledging it. And
no, but I don't think they'll do that.
To clarify, I don't need Marvel to make a big negative deal out of it. That's, you know, not what I wanted to imply. I expect them to do it in a positive, or I would hope they do it in a positive way. And like I said, I don't need it to be the focus of his character, but I don't think it should, you know, not be mentioned or not at least acknowledged. I guess moving on to a similar topic, like, I know why Marvel changed the ethnicity or gender of these iconic characters, because it is a big statement. But on the other hand, I feel, and I've seen other people say, why not just have new characters who don't fit the stereotypical kind of white guy mold, you know? And I have mixed feelings about that because, yeah, again, on the one hand, you're sending a very powerful statement by changing these well-known characters. But it also kind of feels like getting scraps is a very powerful and kind of negative expression, and it isn't as bad as that. But on the other hand, it's like, we already had, these roles already existed, and now we're kind of allowing minorities and women to step into them rather than giving them something completely their own.
Well, why do they need new characters when they already have all these female superheroes?
Fair enough.
Doesn't it send a bigger message to say that now Thor is a woman as opposed to just introducing a new female character, which then has to build up the popularity on her own?
Right.
I don't think it sends a message. It just gets people talking about it.
Exactly. And it's so much better for the marketing, so much better for the exposure.
Right.
Marketing, exposure, that's all it is. I don't think it's... By message, I would interpret that as it's empowering. I don't think it's any more empowering than they actually, like, really, you know, put a lot of marketing push behind She-Hulk. Mm. It's like, oh, we're going to come up with a movie and really make her a central part of the story. Ms. Marvel, they could do something with her. She's pretty powerful. She's like a female Superman.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not bad. And I think you said it exactly right, Lyle, where this gets back to marketing, where those other characters obviously don't sell, because if they did, they would have the movies. So, you know,
I think if you want more women to read comic books, and if that's what it is to have more female writers.
Right.
Gail Simone, she's written Birds of Prey, some Wonder Woman, some Atom. I liked her when she wrote Villains Unlimited, and then she went on to write the Secret Six. Like, she's really good. Just have more people like her, or give her a bigger book.
Right. I guess it kind of gets into that, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy, or that cycle of people are attracted to, how can I word this? People are attracted to things that look like them. And so I'm sure in order to get more...
That's not true with comics.
Okay.
No superhero looks like any comic book.
You know what I'm saying. Okay. Let me rephrase that. I'm sure people...
In the right light, I look a little like Bruce Wayne.
Right, yeah, right. And when I squint, I'm all muscled up like Thor, too. Yeah, exactly. No. But I think if you can see yourself, how about that? If you can see yourself or your gender or your ethnicity in the character, I imagine you're more attracted to read that character's story. So I imagine you kind of get into a trap of, it would be great if there was more female writers. But to do that, we have to get women reading comic books to, you know, from a young age, to get them to want to do that. And how do you do that? By presenting female characters. And of course, it would be great if they were written by women.
Yeah.
The ball, you have to start the ball rolling somewhere. And mm-hmm. I think maybe it's problematic, but yeah, you have to have more female characters and more, you know, superheroes of color to get people interested, and then hopefully that would encourage a crop of writers, you know, to then take over.
Well, I mean,
maybe, yeah.
Falcon and Panther have been around since the 60s, Cage since the 70s, John Stewart, the Black Green Lantern, is in the 80s. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a wealth of African-American superheroes, and One quarter of the Fantastic Four was female. There's always like a female.
And one quarter of the Fantastic Four is a giant orange rock man. What are you trying to say?
Right. And where are those writers? Oh, yeah.
They got that demographic covered at least.
If that wasn't going to grab them, nothing's going to grab them. We don't need to have more rock people in groups. So, yeah. I see what you're saying, and perhaps because comic books is a very visual medium, you need the characters that physically look like you in a certain respect.
Right.
Same skin color, or same ethnicity, same sex. But when I read a book, like I just happen to be reading The Feast of Crows, and I just happen to be on one of Samuel Tarly's chapters, and physically, like, we're very different. I mean, we're both men, but I certainly couldn't be cast in the Game of Thrones as Sam Tarly, or fans would be outraged. Like, oh, he's clearly Jaime Lannister.
Right. Right.
I was going to say Varys, but I bit my tongue.
Varys.
Just kidding.
So, but, you know, there are certain things about him that you can connect to, or you feel that character is, from your perspective, true to what they are, and it rings true, and that's how you connect to the characters.
Right.
So I think it depends on not necessarily that you need a female writer, although I think that would be more important than changing characters, male characters to females. I think that would be more important, but if people who are writing these stories that have female characters, it rings true, or these are the type of stories that women want to read or girls want to read.
Right. No, I completely agree, and I guess getting back to the example of Samuel Tarly, I mean, if it was an African American woman written exactly the same way, or if the character was a Summer Islander, right, female Summer Islander for whatever reason, would you identify as strongly? I don't know.
When I took the Game of Thrones quiz, I got Arya Stark.
Congratulations, an annoying little girl.
Some of my quiz answers are women, so I think I could speak on this issue.
Right.
So, random thought, if Twilight had been a comic instead of a book, do you think it would have still been popular with young women? Basically, I mean, we're talking about if female writers were writing the stories for it, and so I'm thinking of an example of a female author who also had a very wide readership.
Oh, couldn't you have gone with J.K. Rowling?
I thought about it.
No, but that's Harry Potter, so that's a male protagonist.
Exactly, yeah.
No, I think that's an excellent example.
And I just wonder, would it have been as much of a hit? I don't think so, because comic books are less mainstream than novels are, but it's the same time.
I think, and this is not to praise Japanese manga, but it could have been a hit in Japan.
Yes, very much so, I think.
But that's just, because I think you really cut to the heart of the matter, because that form of literature is very accepted and very accessible in a regular bookstore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they present a lot greater range of stories on that in that style.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas North America is really committed to, by and large, to the superhero genre. Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I that's not a criticism at all, because that's the way we like to see it in North America. So that, I think it would have died because nobody wants to read a vampire story.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when we were talking about anime, about how many parents took their young children to see Princess Mononoke despite the amount of blood and gore in there, and how American audiences didn't really seem ready for it.
Yeah, then it also bombed in the theater, because they said, hey, it's a cartoon, it's for kids. Oh my God, what's that? You know, this is a terrible cartoon.
But, and there's a whole Disney thing, but that's another issue.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, because, the number of women I see reading manga here, because it's just a society, it's an accepted form of literature.
And since we are talking about inclusiveness, and this relates to when we were talking about the D&D review, and people were criticizing their inclusive wording. And my point, the put up or shut up point, was, okay, if you're going to say it's not perfect, then
suggest something.
Show us perfection. And somebody did that. So we just want to give them a little bit of a shout out.
So much like Marvel, we will pretend that they did it in response to listening to our podcast.
It doesn't matter that it predates our episode. And in an article titled D&D Inclusivity and Why I'm Not Buying the New Edition, posted by a person named Neon Gray, and the site is called The Happy Cube, they went through several points why they didn't think it was perfect, which is great. So it's very clear. Then they wrote what they think would be better wording. And what I really liked about this is they this person confined themselves to the word count.
Right, so they kept the same word count and fit what they thought was a better example or a better couple paragraphs into the same space Wizards devoted.
So I really like that. And then they followed that up with some points as to why they made the choices that they did with it. So yeah, well done. I like that. So we'll link this article on our website. And the reason why they're not buying D&D actually isn't about the inclusiveness and the wording there. It's about something else. But you can read the article and find out why.
Right.
So anyway, I wanted to mention that before we
that's a good point.
Moved on.
Yep. Because somebody did put up.
However, many others did not shut up.
Right.
Well, how much should we
do? Since I have my finger on the pulse of Twitter, it has kind of died down or at least been superseded by the, you know,
Thor
and Captain America.
You know, I think I was actually pretty happy. I didn't read up that many articles about the D&D language, but even though I saw quite a bit of criticism on them, the vast majority of people also gave them a lot of credit for trying. And so I thought overall the feeling was pretty positive, which was good. I like positive.
So about gaming or your gaming table, and since people are talking about being inclusive and wanting to see more people around the gaming table, and I doubt if you'd find anyone who would openly say that they didn't want to see more women or more ethnicities around the gaming table or at the conventions. And of course, if you were to ask us, we would like to see a greater age range, particularly younger people. And that's great. And steps that a company like Wizards of the Coast is doing is a great way to do that. And I think conventions have been doing a fairly good job of trying to have panels that are more diverse and have topics that I thought were pretty unexpected, which is good because then more people then could find something that they like. But how about in the game? Like if you're going to do a game, and I'll divide it into two parts. Let's say you are one of those groups that happens to be diverse. You have a mix of genders and you have a mix of ethnicities and backgrounds and religions or whatever. Should you then make your game inclusive so everyone can identify with some of the characters in the game? And second part of that, what if you just have a table that, let's say, is all white men? Should you then still try to make the story inclusive and have a variety of different sexualities, genders, ethnicities?
Well, regarding the second part of that, one of the best DMs I've ever known, his name was Todd. He ran games down in extremely rural central Illinois, where there were pretty much only white men to choose from. I'm sure there were white women around, but they were generally in his gaming.
We weren't at the age where we noticed them.
they're all too old, in their 20s. Where was I going with that? Oh, yeah. But one thing he always strove for in his games was to have a woman at the gaming table. And one of the rules that he had was that everyone should play their own gender, however they identify that. And his reasoning for it was that, of course, the different genders think and behave differently. So the dynamic of the group, he found, was always improved when there was a mix of them at the table.
Sorry, you couldn't find any women in central Illinois, but Todd managed to find a woman for each one of your gaming sessions? Was it the same woman?
That first was a hyperbole, but okay. I actually only ever sat in on one of his sessions, but one of my friends went to university down there, so I got regular updates about the campaign.
It was a university without women. It was an all male university.
Ha ha ha. No, he actually he actually lived and gamed in an Amish community because he sold fried chicken to the Amish, I think it was. But anyway, it was there weren't many players to be had in general.
And they were Amish?
And liked fried chicken.
What's this? Well, you've taken it. You haven't clarified it. You've muddied it. Oh, sorry. Did I say Central Illinois? I meant in an Amish community in Central Illinois because he was selling fried chicken. Oh, okay. That's where the woman came from. What?
I think all of the players were university Amish students in the nearby university. However, the actual gaming area was located in an Amish community.
Okay.
None of the people involved were Amish.
Okay.
So I don't even know why I brought it up.
I don't know either.
The Amish don't fry?
I don't know.
I'm just wondering where they got the fried chicken, and the only thing is, I mean, they would be able to grow chickens. I don't think that's against their faith.
All right. First of all, you raise chickens. Second of all, what does the fried chicken have to do with anything, goddammit?
Okay.
The Amish are fine with cloning. It's the other parts of science that they're against.
It's the buttons and the zippers.
That hot oil they can't deal with.
Well, their cloning vets have no buttons and zippers. So.
Right. Yeah. All right.
And they're in very muted colors.
So on the important thing, he generally asked that there would be a female at the table, or tried to get a female at the table so that it would improve the group dynamic.
But then he enforced that you play your own gender, your character, be your own gender.
Yes.
That's interesting.
It is. And, you know, actually, when we started our first D&D campaign, I carried along that rule just kind of because it's interesting. But, you know, you didn't like that very much, Wayne, because you...
I was going to say, yeah. And then how much did you guys argue?
The Wayne table flipped. But, this is going to sound weird, but I kind of understand where he's coming from. Like, it's a more mundane version of why I didn't want you to play the octopus in our Eclipse Phase game, Chris. Because, that sounds really bad taken out of context. I just equated playing a woman to playing an octopus.
Right.
But... I do understand his point of, I want you to play this person as a real person, and because you haven't had the experiences this person of a different ethnicity or different gender has had, mm-hmm. I don't think he will be able to play that, you know, with the... Exactly. You won't be able to play it faithfully. So
if they make Captain America an octopus, I would actually want them to see them. Make them a big deal about that.
You know, it's nice to finally have an octopus holding that shield.
Yeah. First of your credit to your race, octopus.
First cephalopod to carry the shield. There you go.
Do you think Obama could make a speech about that? No, but going with my point before, actually, Wayne, you changed my mind on it entirely. In that I don't think that being true or being faithful to the role is the most important thing. I think that, as you brought up, wanting to explore that story and explore that kind of character, that's the important thing. That's what role-playing is about as a game. So, yeah, I've completely reversed my ideas on it. But
you know, it's funny that we're talking about this because it reminds us of the L5R conversation we had today.
Right.
About authentic Japan and whether that's Japanese or not. And then if somebody were to take this, the gender thing... not to an extreme, but just shift it a bit. You could say that unless you're Japanese, you shouldn't play L5R because you're not really going to get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you're just going to be aping what you think the Japanese, medieval Japanese people would have done, and you'd be making a parody of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's not to jump here, but I think maybe that's the difference. Like, not that I have ever played with someone who was intentionally aping an ethnicity or a gender other than their own to kind of make fun of it. I think everyone I've played with has seriously kind of wanted to explore that. But I don't know, that's to me, I think it would depend more on the person than any kind of hard and fast rules about don't do it or what is allowed.
But I will say, I bet you people would make more jokes about playing a woman. And maybe even reverse about a woman playing a man would make more jokes and generalizations than they would if they were doing an ethnicity. They would feel more comfortable with doing it, just like people dress up in drag.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So people will dress up as a woman for Halloween and have the exaggerated breasts and garish makeup and that. Like, so they're having fun with it.
But
and it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's bad that people dress up. For Halloween or something like that. Yeah,
but somebody going to a party in blackface would be pretty unacceptable.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up, Chris. It's interesting how dressing up in drag, in exaggerated bad drag, is acceptable, where you're kind of making fun of a gender, but dressing up in blackface, that would be absolutely... No, society would not accept that.
Except Japanese.
Well, except
society.
Japan. I was kind of like, yeah, okay, yeah.
They're all about the black.
I think that kind of went without saying. They're also all about the drag.
Apparently. Yeah, actually.
Yeah. But, no, that's a good point. But
yeah.
Another part of the reason I think maybe I argued when we were having that discussion, Chris, is not so much the player wanting to explore that race or that ethnicity, even though that can be a big part of it, but that's kind of a personal choice for the player. I also just find that adventuring groups or the party of player characters tends to be not boring, but you can only focus on certain things if everybody's pretty much all the same. You know, like if everybody's male, well, or if all the characters are male, well, then, you know, certain things are just kind of off the table. Whereas if you had like a female character in there, or if you had a mix of ethnicities, you can do more with the party. And there's going to be more of a, you know, diverse, that's the word I'm looking for, a diverse mindset, perception.
Or experience.
Experience, yeah. That
I was just thinking, you know, if the antagonist ducks into a woman's washroom, like, oh.
Exactly.
I need.
Well, hey, yeah, you're all lawful good paladins. Too bad. What are you going to do?
With that cliche, you know, in like the spy or thriller, just like, kiss me. What? Kiss me. Oh, he didn't see us.
Right.
He's
right.
Saying it to a guy, kiss me. What?
Huh? Yeah, yeah. Suddenly everybody is looking at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess we're not quite past that part in right, society. Right. Yeah.
Did I mention this is like the 1930s? No, you didn't.
No, I'm glad you mentioned the 1930s, because having female characters in that, when we play Hollow Earth Expedition, I think adds to that game, mm-hmm. especially because we don't compromise with the setting.
Right.
We don't have female characters in a 1930s America that is very accepting of or understanding of female characters going around and doing all the same things as a man.
Right, right.
So they still have the same cultural norms that they did in history.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you got to deal with that, and you got to play with that, and that can be a lot of fun. When we had a homosexual character. In 1950s Hollywood,
right,
and that was a lot of fun to have in the story, and I'm sure a lot of fun to play. I didn't play the homosexual character.
It was hard, actually.
Yeah, because you have to be closeted, because people aren't going to go, you know, I think the gays should be able to marry, you know, and that wasn't that kind of world.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is where. This person could get beaten, their careers would get ruined, and I believe a lot of states it would be illegal what they were doing. And maybe all the states.
It's anti-sodomy law.
Yeah, I don't know when that was decriminalized. I think some of the things like sodomy are still illegal in some states. Yeah. So that can be a lot of fun. And yeah, but I'm not saying that you always have to tell the stories, and that harkens back to when we talked about Captain America being black. That doesn't mean that just because you have a black character or a gay character or a female character, then it becomes...
All about that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because that's not the sum total of that character.
That's one of the points that I wanted to bring up during the Captain America thing, but I couldn't really jump in. I was going to say, man, I'm glad you guys put words in my mouth for me, because I wasn't able to get one in twice.
I know.
I'm sorry.
But, no, I think one of the things is, despite how I would also be interested in seeing some of the story about a black Captain America be about him being black, I think the Captain America story, doesn't really deal with that side of society so much. It doesn't really handle those kinds of stories. It's more about, you know, punching the Red Skull while he's doing some evil plot.
Right.
And I think that carries over to the game. You know, if your game is about dungeon crawling and monster slaying, the race, the sexual alignment of the characters probably doesn't come into it all that much, because orcs don't care, zombies don't care. But you know, if you're doing a more political campaign, or you're doing a wider, deeper thing than that, then yeah, it should matter. And I suppose it goes with our mantra, you know, if you're going to focus on something like that, then you should make it matter.
You know, I wish you did speak up earlier, because I can see approaching it from changing the type of story, because I think I was thinking. My mind was set in what kind of stories Captain America is about. Mm-hmm. And he is about...
Punching Red Skull in the face.
He's about punching Red Skull in the face, but they also did, and you, if you don't want to read the comics, just watch Winter Soldier, and you can see how they've also shifted it, where he's like a super spy. Mm-hmm. He's not really a spy, because he's Captain America. It's hard to hide like that. But that kind of... idea where he's dealing with terrorist organizations and
right,
that.
Right.
Whereas if Sam Wilson, the Falcon, I think he's got the same way of thinking as Steve Rogers, so I don't know if this would be a shift for the character, but he could be like, let's go everyday America.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be more, not hesitate to say the streets, but the streets, more of a Batman style.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I don't know, that flag that he wears kind of seems a bit odd. But,
yeah.
But I mean, he could do that. I mean, I think when, if I remember correctly, when John Walker became Captain America and Steve Rogers became the Nomad, he went like on a cross-country tour,
mm-hmm.
and it's about him experiencing America as it was, you know, as they would say, as they would portray in a 1980s comic book. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, I could see him telling that kind of story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe even not wearing the costume for a bit and, you know.
Well, I mean, when it comes down to it, life for a black person in America is different than life for a white person. So I think there's a lot of opportunities to expand on the Captain America story with that in mind. So
yeah,
I think he
might go after, the high mortality rate for young black men.
So I think
maybe he mentions the incarceration rate for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it would be a shame if they didn't get into those kinds of things, because you're just opening up so many different avenues for stories in the character. But at the core of it, that's not what Captain America has been about up till now. So
he could go into the prison system.
Yeah.
Like,
actually,
you ever see the movie Brubaker with Robert Redford?
I haven't, no.
I think it's based on a true story, but he's going to be the warden of a prison, but he pretends to be a prisoner.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes in, so you could have... Sam Wilson going as a prisoner.
Right.
You can make such good juxtaposition with that. You know, have him, say, going to a prison in the South or something, where you have these really patriotic, far-right kind of guards, and then you have the black men in prison.
Not prisons in the South. I think...
It's kind of prisons anywhere.
All prisons. Wayne actually had a really good point, because he's watching Orange is the New Black.
Power mm-hmm. through that, yeah.
Yeah, you haven't lent it to me yet. But,
sorry, I asked you if you wanted it and didn't think I got an answer.
I said yes.
All right, sorry.
Whoa, sorry.
I said yes!
But actually, you bring up that point, because I thought that was really good about revisiting, because we've already done a locale's prisons, and then Wayne was mentioning he would like to revisit it because of the ethnicity, which we didn't touch on.
Right, right. I watching that, I said a prison game is... one of the settings where I would feel comfortable making ethnicity matter, because it does in that.
Yeah.
You just kind of, as I say, you just kind of tend to gravitate to your own kind, or your own, your own ethnic group, because those are the people who will kind of watch out for you and take care of you. Not to the exclusion that other people won't, because, you know, friendships do exist between these different groups, and, you know, there are groups that aren't based on ethnicity, but by and large, that's how the people tend to self-segregate in the system. And I think that would be an interesting setting to play, and one where I think he would be doing the setting a disservice to not make ethnicity matter. You kind of wouldn't be, going back to the authenticity thing, like, not making ethnicity matter in a prison system, at least for playing in an American system, would not be playing it authentic enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, I know a guy who just got out of a prison, and he said the exact same thing about how all of the gangs were racially segregated.
Right. Not even gang, because that has, you know, baggage and connotation, but even just like the groups. But now, I guess getting back to your point on what is the game about, and if the game is about dungeon crawling, then race and ethnicity don't really matter. Which I completely agree with. You know, it's completely true. It's going to matter more in certain types of games than others, but just making a diverse group, even if you as a group decide not to do anything with that, the option for it to happen is still there by having a diverse group of adventurers.
That's a really good point, yeah.
So it's kind of like, why not do it? Because you're opening that door, and even if you don't go through, you've opened that door for it to be able to happen without some contrived girdle of gender swapping or reincarnation mishap, adventure.
Sounds like a Japanese anime.
It does. Speaking of which, latest boys love anime that I saw a commercial for is Guy Falls in Love with a Man Who Claims to Be His Motorcycle Come to Life. And, of course, you had this person dressed in a motorcycle-style costume. And I'm just like, why, Japan? Why?
Oh, a guy falls in love with a man.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Huh. Is this a manga or an anime?
It's currently a manga, but I think it
is
might
it for
be,
women?
Yeah, it's one of those boys love, the BL mangas. Shonen. Which tend to be geared more towards women.
Guess where I'm going next week. Well, you know where I'm going. I'm going to go to Tokyo, but my hotel will be in Ikebukuro, which has a street that is for like female otaku. So it has like anime and manga that's right. Targeting them.
Right.
So you'll
probably see a lot of BL stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But Osaka has a store in Denden Town, at least one.
Yep.
Yeah. I haven't been inside.
Neither have I, but I've only ever seen women go in. And now I made it sound like I stand outside like a creep and watch who goes in.
What you doing tomorrow, Wayne? I just creep in Osaka.
Hey, you'd be outside 6-7 hours. I won't see one man go in. Yeah. And you know something? They come out cold. I expect them to come out hot. And appreciate a man talking to them. Appreciate a real man, but no, they don't appreciate that at all.
All right.
Okay, so where were we? Boy falls in love with man who is his motorcycle brought to life. But prior to
so
that,
really,
games.
What,
okay, yeah. I don't think we've really discussed my question though, which means would you change a game depending on who's at the table? So while let's use the D&D example, or you're telling a Captain America story, and you have a bunch of white guys, and you happen to be white guy, and you're just telling a regular D&D story, and let's say that just means killing orcs and dungeon crawls.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what NPCs are in this story or what points you're hitting because it's just hitting the dungeon crawl and a series of challenges and that. But if you have a diverse group, do you want to make sure that your NPCs are equally diverse, or do you want to say, hey, well, this kingdom's fashioned after medieval Europe, so men are knights, or knights are only men, the king's in charge, the queen just kind of sits there, it's just assumed everybody's heterosexual.
Right.
And if somebody were to act, or somebody were to, like, let's say, try something same-sex, then you would either just shut that down quickly or they would be thrown in prison or something like that.
I would love to. If I had a group like that, I would love to throw in a closeted NPC and see if they could find it out or if they do find it out or something and what would happen because of that, especially with the connotations that something in a medieval setting might have.
Okay, so you would play up the medieval setting. But have
absolutely.
Like a
well,
like,
I mean, the big caveat here is, of course, what the story is. Again, even if I had a diverse group, if it was the dungeon crawl, killing monsters, you know, grid on the table kind of thing, probably not. But
so when they complain, you go, "What are you talking about? You know that blacksmith? Yeah,
you know those orcs?
Horses?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're all.
Yeah, no, that blacksmith's totally gay. Yeah.
Well, I would not any of the members in the group, but I'd try and find another gay person and try and get some hints at what a closeted person might act like. And try and throw those into the game.
Wow! So now apparently all your friends are closeted, who might be homosexual, are closeted.
No, it's just funny the way he talks. He grew up surrounded by only men, and then he would have to try to find a gay person. You don't have a very diverse circle of friends. But then again, we're in that circle, so I guess we don't.
What are you talking about?
Is it diverse? I mean, Lyle, you're Canadian.
We don't have a circle of friends. We have a triangle. So to answer your question, like if you're playing in a game where like setting matters, like if you're playing a historical game, well, mm-hmm. then yeah, I completely agree with Chris where it's going to depend on the story being told. But if you're playing a game where kind of the not that the setting doesn't matter, but where you know if you're playing like a non-historical game, I'll say for mm-hmm. lack of a better term,
right.
then my answer is kind of the same as before, where why wouldn't you just make, provide diversity in the NPCs you're presenting, just because it opens up story doors, again, for lack of a better term.
Well, that's a good point, but what if it opens up story doors that you aren't really part of the adventure? So you've made a very intriguing black lesbian knight.
Wow, just cram all those stereotypes in there. Okay.
I didn't put this person in a wheelchair.
All right. I think are you regretting not doing that?
How is that stereotype?
He used adjectives, not stereotypes. Dude.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I should have caught that one first. Yeah. So no, for you make a character. So you've got like a black Brienne of Tarth.
Right.
Right. In a society where there aren't a lot of female knights, and you have this NPC hit on a female PC. So everybody's like, oh, she's a lesbian, you know,
right,
kind of thing. Because we were talking about how do you portray sexuality unless you have
right
and, someone yeah, do yeah. something sexual. Then they become really intrigued by this character, but is that opening a door that you don't want them to go through? And not that you don't want them to explore lesbianism or something like that, but you don't, that's not your adventure, because really you're just introducing this character to go, and the ogre's over there, why are you still here?
Right, well, if
the ogre's over there.
I mean, but if you're going to go into to this person's behavior, like sexual behavior and ethnicity and everything like that, and you don't want to explore those things, then just leave those out. All you need to say is blacksmith.
No, but Lyle's point is, if you present these diverse characters, and then the players see that diversity as a hook and start pursuing
and you
that
guys
story
saw it
line.
With the Captain America. You saw, hey, Captain America's black. That's a hook.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think there's a couple of different things going on here. Me personally, if that happened, I would just go, okay, great. If the player group now thinks whatever this character is more interesting than the other thing they had planned, then the original storyline gets ripped up, and now we're doing this story instead.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're just kind of using this character as a, you know, a little bit of, wow, I almost said, okay, for it's going to sound terrible, if you're just using this character to add a little bit of color to your world.
It's an appropriate word.
Then, then if the player does kind of have their character react and to this flirtation and start to go into it, and I am not prepared or I don't want the player or character to do that, then I could just kind of, you know, have the NPC laugh it off as a joke, and then, you know, give the player characters the kick towards the correct storyline they're supposed to be going to. Where it'd be like, oh yeah, laugh it off, and then, yeah, by the way, the ogre's down there. Go down there.
I think that's part of being a good game master, is being willing to follow the hooks that your characters find interesting, or be able to naturally steer them back onto the adventure.
Right. Which is probably a better way of saying it, but
it's shorter.
Yeah. Which is often better. Yeah. Well, since you've been asking the questions, then how about yourself?
Whatever works for the story.
Oh, come on.
Mr. Question Asker.
No, I wouldn't go out of my way to make something inclusive because I felt I had to make everybody at the table feel comfortable. Not that I would be trying to make them feel uncomfortable or excluded. But if I was setting a noir game in the 50s or a pulp game in the 30s, I think it would be fun to play that and play those societies.
Right.
And setting a game in the 70s, you know,
right?
Then to play what it actually was, and then there you would have diverse people just to play that up. If I was doing fantasy, yeah, I think I could have characters that were different because I just think it would make the background a little bit richer and less not less bland, but less
white.
No, stereotypical in the sense that when we think of a D&D adventure, we think the old mage.
Right.
The old male mage and the busty bar wench.
Right.
Tavern server.
Oh man, that's going to be my next adventure. Great. The NPC is an incredibly young wizard, and you walk into the tavern, and it's a bunch of well-oiled muscle guys with leather thongs. Yeah, there you go.
I think no, but if you just to use that, I know you're throwing that out as a joke, but if you used, if you had a tavern like that, then again, whatever works for the story, because but I know that people would have a reaction to that because you're playing against type.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
And then that's either me adding a little color to the game and to the story, or I want them to pay attention to what's going on. Or this is a sign that, hey, things are not gonna be what you expect.
Right.
And that's actually a really good point that that doing that alone, breaking with convention, that makes whatever you are breaking the conventions of important. It makes it stand out. So it's something that you have to be ready for the characters to possibly pursue as if it were a hook or just as an interesting part of the campaign that they want to explore. We were talking about before about what if the players follow it and you weren't planning for it. You should know that if you do that kind of an action, if you break those conventions, there's a chance that the players will follow through with them.
That's probably a larger chance, you know?
Yeah, and I think we've discussed this in past episodes or mentioned is embrace stereotypes. Because like Chris said, you can break them. You can break convention and go against them, and it's just one more dramatic tool that you have.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you were playing vampire and you had a lot of gay, bisexual characters, then it might not be as noticeable because people would expect that about vampires. So, I mean, it's great. So you can have a very diverse game. Like when we play Vampire Changeling, we have very diverse characters and it doesn't matter.
Right, right.
Because we're kind of freaked out by the person with doll parts.
Right.
So it doesn't matter that we talk to three black people and two white people, or so, you know.
Didn't realize you were keeping track. Well, okay.
No, but you don't do the accounting in a game like that,
right?
Because you expect that already in that game.
Huh.
Whereas in a maybe this is why Dungeons and Dragons needed to be so explicit in its in its sex paragraph is that. There are expectations that, you know, we all pretend we don't see.
Right.
But they're there. And people expect it to be a predominantly white game and almost asexual because we're thinking of Lord of the Rings.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or the sex is kind of played for comedic effect.
Is sex even played for comedic effect?
Maybe it sounds very juvenile, but, you know, you do the busty bar wench. You know, that is... a stereotype, and I think in a lot of D&D games, you know.
Oh, I see. Okay, I get you.
Not necessarily sex, but yeah, maybe the adult nature. But I know you didn't directly ask this question, Lyle, but for me playing a character at the table, I try and play things that are different from myself. However, like I've played the closeted homosexual actor in your Nora thing, and I tend to play female characters for just about everything, but I would actually not do that if a character I was playing, again, for lack of a better term, I'm going to butcher this, was kind of sitting at the table with me. Like, I would be less inclined to play a woman if we had a female in our group. Or I would be much less inclined to play any kind of ethnicity if a person of that ethnic group was sitting at the table with me, only because I would feel uncomfortable. Because I would feel like I would inadvertently be making fun of them or do things incorrectly or minimize their experience. And so I would just probably avoid that.
Well, that wraps up our episode on inclusiveness. And it's been a big month for inclusiveness. If we look from D&D up to Marvel, we can see things that we thought were genuine attempts to make people feel more included in the game or the universe or the community. We've seen things that were what we thought were a bit of a marketing gimmick, but hey, we're fine with it. Not as a marketing gimmick, though.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe <I'll>. And we saw something where, like with the Captain America, that might be something that they're going to explore, but it could be just something that just is, hey, because we're there in society. Mm-hmm.
Right. True that.
And as far as inclusiveness in your games, of course, be as inclusive as you can and also make the stories work. And diversity can really help a story. It gives it a lot of dimensions or it gives it a lot of color, as Wayne is reluctant to say. And stereotypes can actually work for you because it's fun to break them in the game.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us again on Out of Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com. Out of Red Hands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can plus one us on G+. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter or you can join up and talk to us in our forums. Those are at idleredhands.com/forums and are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot and see you next time. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Hi.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.